since Alex Hollings is a gun guy, I thought I'd play a little 38 Special, which is a pretty, as names of bands go, 38 Special is a pretty cool name. So joining me normally on Monday, but we recorded this on Monday to play on Tuesday, Alex Hollings. So Alex, first of all, good morning. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks a lot for having me, man.
Always a pleasure. In the news, the Marine Corps suffers something that doesn't happen very often, and that is the loss of an Amtrak with Marines and sailors aboard. Not that anybody needs a reminder of how deadly, you know, the training and that Marines do around the world, but nonetheless, a reminder anyway. About how serious it is. Any thoughts? You're a guy who loves equipment and things military. Any thoughts on what happened?
Well, the first thing that came to mind, to be honest, when I heard about this story is, so I have no training, no water training particularly in an AAV, but it was in a boat accident a few years ago off the coast of New Jersey. And water is genuinely one of my greatest fears. When I was 8 years old, I watched my older brother drown in a pool. He was in a coma for a couple of months. He actually died for a little while. He did have a full recovery, though. Oh. But for me, it dramatically affected the trajectory of my life. One of the reasons I joined the Marine Corps was because I'm afraid of the water, you know? And I was with my brother when we were in that boat accident. It was shortly after a hurricane, and we hit a sandbar doing about 30 knots, which on a large boat is really fast to hit a sandbar. And we ended up pretty banged up, but for the most part, okay. And the storm that it happened in was one of the scariest things that's ever happened to me. I'm usually very good in a stressful situation, and I wasn't in that situation. You know, just being out in the ocean in some rough waters in a bad situation was terrifying to me. And when you think about what happened to these guys in this AAV, you know, there were 16 people on board, which isn't like the maximum capacity for one of these vehicles, but it is cramped nonetheless, especially with 16 people and their gear. The fact that 8 of the Marines were able to get out of this vehicle, based on how fast it must have gone down, and also based on the assumption that I think that they must not have been able to get the top hatches open, it's remarkable that 8 guys got out. I know not all of those 8 survived, but what a horrible and tragic reminder of, like, in all honesty, you know, we tend to think of the Marine Corps as a warfighting apparatus, which of course it is, but we don't realize, just as you mentioned, the real threat, the real risk involved in conducting these types of operations. We're so good at it at this point that something like this can shake us up, you know, because as you said, it doesn't happen all that often. This doesn't happen all that often because Marines are damn good at what they do, you know, and this was a tragic fluke, but it's a good reminder for just how serious all of this is. Not just the war fighting, not just being in a combat zone, but the day-to-day operations that service members are conducting all around the world are serious business, you know?
Yeah, you know, one of my friends who's an F-18 pilot will come on, and one of the things we do here on All Marine Radio is we don't speculate about what happened, but we just talk about, you know, here's what they were doing at night. So I don't care if it's a night gun run on an F-18 out in 29 Palms or retanking, F-18s tanking off the coast of Okinawa. We talk about...
It's an incredibly dangerous operation.
Right. And what would they be doing? How are they doing it? What is the danger involved? What are you aware of? You know, all the things that, you know, I mean... We all had jobs in the Marine Corps. You know, I wasn't a pilot. I don't understand how tanking occurred. I don't understand what an F-18 pilot's doing at night, you know, as you know, he or she is getting to do a gun run. So, you know, one of the things we do is explain stuff and in the wake of these things. And my friend who's an F-18 pilot talked about, he said, well, when these things happen, he says it tends to be like holes in Swiss cheese, and except the slices are from different blocks of cheese. And then you put five slices together, and there's one little hole that is common to every one of them by sheer fate and or whatever, the randomness of life and things that line up when these things happen. And I think that's, you know, to
that's
me,
that's a really, really good analogy. I love that.
Yeah. He said, it's just, you know, these things, you know, are converging and they're not related. And then all of a sudden something happens and they, you know, that these things do happen. So, and I was talking yesterday with a friend of mine, Jeff Kenny. He's a retired colonel. He was the OPSO of a MU. And, you know, he said, look, I think I can remember three of them in my lifetime as a Marine, that, you know, between 30 and 40 years. And one of them was due to negligence in the boat basin at Del Mar. And that was, you know, that was human error. And then, you know, and then two others. But so the platform is inherently safe. And so, so again, the investigation will talk about, I mean, but these pieces of technology are pretty amazing. The way the Marine Corps, they've slept the whole fleet of our Amtraks a couple of different times. And we were talking about the SLEP program, but if you ever see anything that has SLEP, stands for Service Life Extension Program.
Extension program.
If
yeah.
if you ever see anything that goes through it, from tanks to ships, I mean, literally, it's taken down to the metal, right? And then they test the metal, and then if the metal meets the appropriate parameters, then they begin to, you know, they recoat the metal, they treat the metal, they do all the things, and they build this thing back from essentially zero. It's amazing.
You know, and it's worth noting, going back to that Swiss cheese idea, you know, for those who may not be familiar with these operations or really any operations, the premise behind that Swiss cheese thing is really that there is a possibility for error, for failure in literally everything that we do, right? Whether we're talking about human involvement in executing something, or we're talking about the structural integrity, just like you're talking about, of the steel involved, let's say in an Amtrak or in an F-18, right? So the idea here is that, and the Marine Corps, I would argue, is really, really good at this, even from a leadership standpoint and small unit leaders, operational risk management is built on this premise that if you take these layers with the understanding that there's a certain percentage likelihood for failure of each safety layer that you put on. One layer is training. Another layer is individual equipment that the Marine has. Another layer is the manufacturer who developed the whatever piece of equipment you're using. Another layer are the safety protocols established for use of that piece of equipment, and so forth and so forth. The idea isn't that the idea is hopefully that even an egregious failure at one level can be offset sufficiently by the safety protocols of the other levels, right? But the idea that there could be that one little thing that goes wrong, and this is what Mac's getting at, that one little thing that you did wrong today, or that one little thing that a manufacturer did wrong one day at work in 1987 when that piece of steel was first going through. That one thing that was wrong, theoretically, will be overlapped by multiple layers of other safety protocols, pieces of equipment, periods of training or instruction. So that way, those little cracks never produce a cataclysmic failure, a catastrophic failure. The reason why this happens so rarely, you know, is because of those overlapping layers of safety. And it makes me think of NASA, where during the shuttle program, we kind of stopped watching space shuttles launch. We kind of stopped watching spacewalks occur because NASA so effectively, like the Marine Corps, when it comes to taking what is literally, you know, a tank / semi truck, making it waterproof, throwing two dozen Marines in it and having it go on both water and land. This is a ridiculous proposition, but we have been so effective at mitigating the risk here that we think of it as day-to-day ops. We think it's totally normal for astronauts right now to be screaming above our head at 18,000 miles per hour in the International Space Station, which is in low enough orbit that it's not actually in zero gravity. It is just consistently falling, right? And we think that's normal. Yeah. We think it's totally normal for two dozen Marines to be in a metal tin can that can drive on water, drive on land, and effectively displace the explosive blast of an IED, right? We think that that's normal because we're so damn good at it. When these tragic things happen, it's important to remember that we are damn good at it. It's still awful. There's going to be an investigation, like Max said. We're going to find out where those failures lie. But I really love that analogy, that it's the pieces of Swiss cheese that statistically almost never have an overlapping hole. Every once in a while it does. And it's I think we've seen it a lot in aviation in recent years.
Right.
Last year was a rough year for aviation. This year's been better, but there have been a few mishaps. This, I think we're inclined every time this happens to want to blame someone. I understand. But I think it's an important thing to remember that what we're doing is death defying every day, you know?
No. And you know, and that was, I'm really lucky given the people that I know, to be able to come on to explain, you know, the decision, you know, to, even to splash those tracks off the back of a ship, right, involves risk of you got to flood the well deck, right? They go off the back. Well, there's a decision process relative to weather, relative to sea state, right, relative to the wind, because while they are seagoing vessels, right, it's not like they're destroyers or anything that does, right, bad weather. They're essentially, you know, moderate to fair sea state animals, and so those decisions have to be made. And even the Mute commander can say, "Yes, let's go." But if the command, if the commanding officer of the ship says, "I'm not good with it," then he or she is the ultimate authority of that. And so there's a whole criteria that goes into. And then the other thing is they don't operate alone. It's not like this vehicle was alone. They're normally company operations, which is, you know, anywhere from 13 to 16 Amtraks that are operating, you know, in relatively close proximity to each other. And even this, when this one screamed, you know, that it was under duress, there was other tracks that got there, you know, almost right away. The problem is when things go wrong, you know, they go wrong in a hurry. And
26 tons sinks quickly, man. 26 tons is no small amount of steel.
No. The anything else about either the platform or the technology about it, Alex? Because you guys always do a pretty good job at covering all of that.
Well, so from what I understand about this and similar circumstances, you know, there are a couple of different ways for you to rapidly get out of one of these AAVs, right? I mean, the primary exit is the big back door that you'd open on a beachfront, right?
Right.
But other than that, there are top hatches, and then there are also like the gunner's hatch, effectively, right? So in a situation like this where you're in an AAV that's going under, you need to get those top hatches open basically immediately for them to have been effective at all. And those top hatches aren't easy to open. You know, if you've ever been in one of these AAVs, you know, sometimes you got to bang on the top hatch with a hammer to get the handle to break loose, to pop open. And once you're under, I don't know, I might be remembering the number wrong, but once you're under 3 feet of water, you're not going to get that hatch open. It might have been 2 feet, it might have been 4 feet, but the collective weight of the water above the hatch is going to limit the hatch's ability to open. At that point, the only way out is through the gunner's hatch, you know? And if you're wearing all your gear, that's a real tight fit, if it's a fit at all. And so I think that one thing we should remember when we're talking about this is that the fact that some of these Marines survived is incredible in and of itself. And it speaks, honestly, very likely, we'll find out in the investigation, but it very likely speaks to the heroism of some of those involved, you know? To get anybody out of there alive, I think, is a miracle, not because it's such a dangerous piece of equipment, but because it was such a cataclysmic and dangerous situation, you know?
And again, it happens fast, but, you know, I will tell you this, and Jeff Kenny and I were talking about it yesterday, but I don't know how many years ago, I think it's 2 years ago that an Osprey went into the water off Australia, and 23 of 26 Marines got out of that, which I would tell you is, I mean, that
is a miracle.
Yeah, when you go into the water in that kind of a violent way, the fact that 23 of 26 got out is is miraculous. Like,
well, genuinely, I mean, I'll share with you a very personal failing of mine. But in that boat crash that I was in, I was on a boat with three other guys. It was a 40-foot boat. When we crashed, shortly before we crashed, the weather was really bad. The boat was in a bad situation. We were in a bad situation created by our own foolishness. I fell off the flybridge of the boat, landed on the bottom deck, and just shut down. I just stayed right where I was for probably 15 minutes. I ended up getting back up onto my feet shortly before we crashed, which probably ended up getting me hurt a little bit worse in the midst of it. But it's important to remember just how dangerous, just how scary. If me doing 30 knots in a 40-foot boat, something meant to stay in the water, I shut down for a bit. And I'm the guy you can count on in a car accident. You know, I'm the guy you can count on in a fist bite. It talks to the heroism of those guys, man. To be able to do what you need to do to save your life, to save the lives of others, in something that is that scary, that intense, it's incredible to me. Just like that Osprey situation, the fact that Marines got out of this alive is something that I'm counting my blessings for. It's incredible.
No, you know, I the first experience I ever had like that was a helicopter crashing inside of my assembly area. I mean, inside the perimeter. And I remember having conversations later about, well, were you nervous that the helicopter was going to explode and all the other things that I guess you think about later. And then thinking, no, I think my training just defaulted to what I'd been trained to do. And I knew there were Marines in there, and I knew that we had a corpsman, and I knew that I had some life-saving skills, and I knew I couldn't let them die like that. And so it was almost like I didn't think about it. I did what I thought I had been trained to do. But let me tell you, I know there's guys that day that didn't, because they were scared, they were terrified. And so the training is, you know, you do it so much, so when you do hit that, you know, oh my God, what just happened, right? Is this thing going to explode? Hopefully you react, right? Instead of think it, that, you know, Marines call it think fucking yourself to death. But I'm telling you, you can train a lot and still not do it the right way the first time. And that's the significance of experience in these things, in that, you know, after the first time you do learn a lot with that, you go through something like that about, wow, what just happened and how did I react? And the next time it happens, God forbid, you know, can I react differently? You know, can I react better? And what do I need to think about? So, terrifying, shocking, because it's just, you know, I mean, that Osprey, it bounced off. I think it was the Bon Homme Richard as it came in. You know, these guys are thinking about showering and getting something to eat and whatnot. And all of a sudden they're upside down in the water and it's pitch black. In this case, you know, these guys have been operating on San Clemente Island. They get back on this vehicle and, you know, they're going to do the same thing. Going to get out of this stuff, going to get some hot chow, blah, 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 blah. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, they're fighting for their lives. So, no, those are, and again, that's why you're training. As Alex said, the fact that a significant number of those guys got out is a testament to their training, but again, it's just a rough day. What else are you writing about?
We've got a bunch of stuff going on with Sandbox News right now. I get, you know, change gears to a little more positive, but we just published our 1,000th story on Thursday.
Really? Congratulations.
Incredible. We haven't been around for all that long. And I think that of that 1,000 stories, I've written a solid bit more than 25% of them. But I've got – I guess this would be a great time for me to mention that I am just incredibly lucky to work with the team that I work with. We've at the same point as we hit our 1,000th story, we hit our July traffic goal. We hit our July growth goals. In a very real way, Sandbox was affected just as much as I think a lot of other companies and businesses out there by the coronavirus. You know, we had a pretty strong first quarter, and then our second quarter, you know, took a serious hit. A big part of our business is based on recruits going to boot camp. And when recruits stopped going to boot camp, you know, our revenue came to a screeching halt. And I'm really fortunate that I work with a team that just, you know, they find a way to make mission. I think in large part because most of us are service members and military spouses, you know. But so we had a bit of a dip there in the second quarter. And we came back in this first month of the third quarter accomplishing my goals that were probably too aggressive back before the coronavirus ended the world. And so we're absolutely ludicrous post-coronavirus ruining everything. And we still managed to hit it. So I'll take this opportunity to say huge thanks to, you know, Amy Dickey, George Hand, Victoria Kelly, Nicole Utt, literally everybody, Justin Lee, that we've got writing content for us. It's thanks to them that we hit our goal. But we're just now launching some new things on Sandbox News that I think will help us grow more, but are kind of specialized. And I think, you know, the all-Marine radio audience, you guys are a lot of Marines, Marine veterans. One thing that you guys are probably all aware of is that recruiters are more often than not kind of treated like sleazy used car salesmen in this country. When in my experience, maybe it was different in the 70s and the 80s or something like that, but in my experience, I've never met a recruiter who misled his poolies in order to get them to enlist. My recruiter certainly didn't lie to me. If anything, he knew just how to talk to me to make me want to talk him into letting me join the Marines. So we launched an entire new last week recruiting section that is specific to the recruiting community. It's called recruiting, but it is not with the intent of recruiting anyone. Instead, we want to engage with the recruiting audience. So that's my big focus this week is producing some more content that's not just about recruiting, but are good, valuable resources for today's recruiters, especially amid, you know, COVID-19 and having to lean harder into social media than ever, having to lean harder into VTC for one-on-one interviews than maybe you ever had before. So our goal is to support the recruiting community. I mean, there's somewhere between 10 and 20,000 military recruiters, you know, operating right now who are doing an absolutely essential part of America's defense apparatus that a lot of us a lot of Americans tend to dismiss or even demean. And so
be really careful with the whole demean thing, boys.
You know,
and girls.
It's true, though. I mean, how often have you heard stories about moms or dads that have run a recruiter out of their house because he was talking to the child?
You see them on a regular basis of school districts that, you know, we will not allow military recruiters on our campus.
You know, and we've seen it in recent legislation. You know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has proposed two pieces of legislation. One based on barring military recruitment on Twitch, which is a streaming platform, if you're not familiar with it, that's got a lot to do with video games. And the other piece of legislation that was proposed was banning military recruiters from recruiting in the American school system. I find that troubling in large part because lots of companies and lots of businesses recruit through America's school system because we should. We should be trying our best to give high school graduates the best possible career opportunities that they can possibly have in front of them. If they want to pursue college, I want them to pursue college. If they don't want to pursue college, if they want to get into a trade or a vocation, or they want to just jump into the working world, we should be preparing them and putting their best foot forward for that. One avenue of that is the military. It's not for everybody, but it is for some of us. You know, I was a punk kid that worked as a pit mechanic for a racing team before I joined the Marines. The Marine Corps paid for my associate's degree, then my bachelor's degree, then my master's degree, you know, and it helped me get to the position that I'm in now. I think that people think recruiters are doing something shady. They think recruiters are going to trick you into serving. There's no need to trick people into serving. The military's got a lot of great benefits, and there are a lot of people out there who just want to serve, you know? And that's kind of the premise behind launching this recruiting channel. It's not to participate in the political discourse. At the end of the day, Sandbox is always an apolitical organization. But it is intent on helping recruiters kind of navigate an increasingly complex digital world and helping recruiters be successful. Because ultimately, if recruiters are successful, then our military is too.
So who's the audience? Is it our recruiters the audience or our recruitees?
Yes. Recruiters are the audience that I'm really trying to cultivate here. You know, we've got we have a military spouse section that was one of the very first content categories I established when I started Sandbox News on purpose, because I wanted military spouses to know that they play as vital a role. They are as welcome at the table as service members are, in my mind. In my head, recruiting is the next logical extension of that. Recruiting is a huge and important facet of our military apparatus, and I spend lots of hours analyzing things like the South China Sea and, you know, our naval posturing in the Pacific versus the Atlantic. I spend lots of hours studying military aircraft and how they can be used strategically to offset advantages. I have spent, in the years that I've been doing this, very little time, to be honest, thinking about how recruiting really does inform our overall force. And it really does, you know. Two things that I've learned in the past couple of weeks that I probably didn't know as effectively before. One is that we have as many as 20,000 recruiters working out there. Two is Sandbox News. I actually haven't unveiled this information anywhere before, so you guys are getting it. But we did a survey of the exact number was somewhere between 400 and 500 junior service members in the past few weeks. Yeah. And 80% of them said that they get the majority of their news through social media. 60% of them said that they follow military-specific media outlets. So that means we're talking about a vast majority of America's service members are getting their information, are learning about the world at large through their Facebook newsfeed, you know, and that's a space that recruiters are operating in as well. That's Facebook, Twitter, you know, TikTok, what have you. Recruiters obviously aren't too active on TikTok because it's banned on military phones, as it should be. But with this understanding that our junior service members now are getting their information through Facebook, largely through shared stories of ours in this military sphere, right? The understanding that our recruiters have to engage in social media more than ever in order to be able to recruit qualified and competitive candidates. The digital sphere, we already knew, right, is the world that we live in now, but it is more so than ever thanks to COVID-19. And now that we know that our military is getting their information through Facebook, our recruiters are recruiting the next generation of service members through Facebook and other social media platforms, I think it is more important than ever that we understand, A, how to effectively use these platforms as a media outlet, as a military news source. If I'm supporting recruiters, as I intend to, it's important that they understand how to use it. But as readers, as consumers of this content, as junior service members who are getting their news largely from their Facebook newsfeed or their Twitter timeline, it's never felt more important to me that we find ways to operate in this sphere responsibly, in a way that keeps our force informed, that empowers our military to do what it needs to do. And in a way that, again, back to the recruiters, that empowers our military to continue doing what it needs to do. And as I've learned over this past year, tracking how many people are shipping to recruit training or basic training for the other branches on a just about weekly basis, I learned now that a 1 week gap on the front end at MCRD Paris Islander San Diego a lot of times results in a 3-month training backup on the other end a year later. These issues compound rapidly, and I realize how important it is that we meet our numbers, how important it is that we accurately convey what military service is for people. Another thing in that survey, it showed that
– hey, let me tell you, tell you, do you know All Marine Radio is a player in recruiting?
I absolutely do, because unlike you, who've long claimed to me that you're not a media personality, you are 100% a media personality.
Listen to this. So my daughter, Colleen, is going to be a senior in high school. And she, this is last week, she says, "Oh my God, Dad, listen to this." I said, "Okay." And She said, "You'll never believe what's going to happen." I said, "You're going to go on a date." She said, "No."
Okay, good.
Exactly. All right, good. So she says, "Do you remember that kid that I told you that wanted to join the Marine Corps?" "Yeah." And she said, "The one I said, yeah, my brothers and my dad are Marines. You probably shouldn't join." I said,
"You
yeah.
know what, though? That's how you get me to join."
I know. I know. And lo and behold, the kid's going to join the Marine. She said, "I ran into him, and he's going to join the Marine Corps." And so
she probably helped, you know, when a young woman that you're talking to, maybe that you're interested in, is like, "Man, you know, I think I could be a Marine." And she's like, "My dad's a Marine. You can't do that shit."
Yeah, you probably should look someplace else. Like, what? Oh, no, I'm so joining that. So, yeah. And trust me, I mean, that and like, "I like that uniform" are the classic, like, 2/3 of Marines join for those reasons.
Yep.
And so she said, and he showed me, stuff the recruiter gave him. And he told, the recruiter said, "And you can listen to these podcasts." And she said, "What do you think what a podcast is?" I said, "All Marine Radio." She said, "Yes." And he listened to it. And when he was listening to something, Colleen does her ID, right? "Hi, this is Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to mine." He heard my ID.
"Hi, this is the girl that turned you down last week."
Exactly.
"And you're listening to..."
She said, "Is that awesome or what?" I said, "It is awesome." I said,
That's fantastic.
I said, "You tell him I want to see him." And she's like, "What?" I said, "No, I want to meet him. Okay. I want to meet him and I can help him. Okay." And she's like, "Well, what are you going to tell him?" I'm like, "That's none of your business because you're not a Marine. You're just a daughter and the sister of a Marine. So you can't know that." And she's like, "Dad, really?" I'm like, "No, I'm going to tell him, look, don't quit. No matter what, don't quit. Okay? And if you don't quit, guess what? At some point on a hilltop, someplace at Camp Pendleton, somebody's going to stuff a piece of metal in your hand and say, 'Congratulations, Marine.'" Right?
You know, that's probably the best advice I think that you could give. I've just published an article last week by a good friend of mine who was a Navy SEAL and went on to join the CIA about how to make it through BUDS, and that was his best advice too. Just tell yourself that quitting is not one of the options that you have. Just as long as that's not there, you'll make it.
Right.
All you have to do is tell yourself it's not an option.
To me, the same thing, you know, with Marine. I remember somebody telling me, like, you know, if you just keep putting one foot in front of the other, at some point, somebody will tell you to stop. Okay, because that's the way this works.
What's wrong with you and I that no one said that yet? Is that the reason why we both work 100 hours a week?
Somebody at some point will tell you, stop, this is over. And you know what? It's pretty good advice. But no, to me, let me tell you, I think that's one of the great lessons of life. There's that one saying, right? Like 50% of it is showing up, right? I tell you that another 25% is don't ever quit. And if you'll show up and you won't quit, guess what? You're in the top third.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I learned in the Marine Corps that ran counter to advice that I was given early in the Marine Corps, but, you know, a lot of people tell you don't stand out. You know, when you go to recruit training, when you get to your first unit, I think the opposite.
Don't stand out for the wrong reasons, okay?
Yeah, don't stand out for the wrong reasons.
They don't.
But put your hand in the air. When they're asking for bodies, put your hand in the air. You know why? Because the guy who always volunteers for the working party tends to get the better ones. But also, because the guy with his hand in the air, you know, I was an administrator, but I got to go be a range coach and a martial arts instructor and fight on the first MMA team the Marine Corps had and play championship football and all those dumb things, deploying to Africa, you know, on a voluntary hump. All this stuff was just because I put my hand in the air when they walked in and asked a bunch of pogues what we wanted to do. Put your hand up. You know, whether it's in the Marine Corps or, you know, if the Marine Corps isn't where you're going and you want to work your way up the chain at Kinko's, put your hand up. I firmly believe.
Well, people
that is
notice
the best advice.
Yeah, people notice that, and they And, you know, through, in the course of noticing that, what they notice is your enthusiasm to work and be part of a team. And so you can't do that if you're standing with everybody else with your hands, you know, behind your back or in your pockets or wherever the hell you would put your hands. So to me, I think in any group, you look for ways to differentiate yourself. Now, if you're just doing it to curry favor, they will they will uncover that. And when they do, woe be to you. Okay, because it will not be pleasant. But if
we all know that corporal who yells because the first sergeant is in earshot. We all know that guy.
Right. And so you don't want to be that guy when that happens. But if you're just a team person and you like being on teams and you're enthusiastic about what you do, to me, just be your hardworking self. And but again, you'll be, you know, for young people, especially that come, I mean, our culture is so different than, you know, than when I grew up, you know, and young people, you know, they're taught their feelings are, you know, how does that make you feel? Well, I never got asked. I did get asked that. That's after my mom spanked me, but how does that make you feel there, stupid one? So the culture is so different. And then you go to that and the culture is upside down and you're going to be pushed hard and isolated in ways you've never been. And
you're going to be expected to be mentally and emotionally self-reliant.
Yeah, even though you're not. And so it's a growing process. But so if you'll just have in the back of your head, right, you know, this is my life for the next 3 or 4 years or whatever you sign up for, right, and this is where it starts. I'm not going to quit because for the rest of my life, no matter what else happens, I'd like some of those guys I've seen and I respect, I'm going to be able to tell people, yep, I was a Marine, and you'll wear that proudly for the rest of your life. So this is the start of 3 years. I'm not quitting, no matter how much they get in my face and tell me that they want me to quit. Here's the paper. Just quit. I'm not doing it.
And, you know, if one of those poolies is listening right now, I'll tell you that when you get to recruit training, you're not going to get any sleep on your way down there, you know, and then they're going to move you into forming. And I'm sure now, especially with the 14 days of quarantine on the front end, remember that they're going to leave you alone with nothing to do but to sit there quietly in a room sitting on a concrete floor for hours. It's going to happen. That is the hardest part. The running, the yelling, the fighting, you can do all that stuff. You knew that stuff was what you were signing up for. The hardest part is that 4 hours they make you sit, you know, left hand, left knee, right hand, right knee on a concrete floor. You sit there for 4 hours wondering, what in the hell have I done? Why am I here? That's the hardest part. You make it past that, the rest will be a breeze. Just keep pushing.
Yeah.
One foot pushing in front of the other.
Okay. Doing a little bit shorter programming this week because I've got a bunch of stuff going on. You told me that you guys have reached some milestones. You want to tease any content before we get out of here today?
Well, you know what? I've got one from Victoria Kelly that I think is an important one just based on what we were talking about earlier. Victoria Kelly is a military spouse. She's been writing for us for a long time, and we don't normally publish op-eds or opinion pieces on Sandbox News, but I think it's an important one. You know, a lot of military families right now are facing a difficult decision. You're trying to decide whether or not you're going to put your kid in distance learning, whether or not you're going to have to put your kid in school, whether you want to or you don't, if your schools are opening. A lot of times military families don't get a choice. You know, if you are a military family where you're both in the service, especially if you're a military family where the service spouse and the other spouse are both employed full time, you might not get a choice. So one of the few rare op-eds we published, it's going up today. Actually, I think it went up 10 minutes ago. It's called Don't Mom Shame Military Families for Putting Their Kids in School. You know, I understand that a lot of people are trying to decide what's best for their family right now. Let's remember that military families don't get a whole lot of options. A lot of times they're living far away from their extended families. A lot of times they're on a fairly tight budget. If their option is you got to put your kid in school, you got to put your kid in school. If they can't support homeschooling because of operational requirements and so forth, let's just remember while we're shitting all over each other on social media about everything to do with the coronavirus that, you know, our military families don't get a lot of options when it comes to this stuff. I think it's a really well-written piece by Victoria. I think it's an important thing to remember is that let's not let's not attack one another over whether or not you support opening schools or you don't support opening schools. Let's try to recognize and acknowledge that every family's got its own challenges, and handle yours. Don't worry about theirs. I guess that's my parting shot.
I think it comes with, dial back the social media comments, and be supportive of other people and help when you can. And if all of us do that, I think it helps. Because, as I bounced around this country the last couple months, and I've been to North Carolina, I've been up to Montana, all I see is people helping each other. And so, to me, I think making a better effort to understand, making a better effort to be a better citizen, even if you don't agree with everything, in times of crisis, that's what good people do. And that's what I've seen all over the country. So, to me, there's the small number of fools that suck the oxygen out of the room because they seem to be on our news feed every night. I don't think that's emblematic of this country. I think most of the people in this country are trying as hard as they can. They're supportive of other people. And I absolutely agree with you. Not everybody's in the same circumstances. And so, among you who is without sin, cast the first stone. That means we all put our rocks down and start helping each other. So, Alex, thanks for the visit. As always, I appreciate it. Tell everybody where they find your work.
Make sure you check out sandboxnews.com every day. That's Sandbox with two X's. You can also find me on Facebook at Alex Hollings Writer. You can find Sandbox News on Facebook by searching Sandbox News. And you can find me on Twitter at AlexHollings52. Twitter is usually the best place to get a hold of me. So if you really want to call me an asshole, that's the spot to go.
All right. That is Alex Hollings. Alex, thanks for the visit.
Thanks, man. Have a good one.
All right. There you have it. More of Auburn Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.